You are listening to the Happiest Lives Podcast with Jill Lillard, episode number 40.
Welcome to the Happiest Lives Podcast, where you'll learn to think better, feel better, and become the woman God says you already are. Here's your host, Jill Lillard.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. We're going to begin a brand new series this month. And it is called How to Get Your Relationship Back on Track. So I'm pretty excited about this because this is the work that I have done for a long time, about 25 years now. I have worked with couples in as a Gottman certified couples therapist to help get their relationships back on track. People have come to me because their relationship is not in the place that they want it to be, and they want to make a big repair attempt and get to a place where they are enjoying one another again. And you're not heading where you thought you were heading. And so this happens in all of relationships. It happens in parenting. Sometimes if you have young children, everyone has gotten a little bit out of control. Maybe structure has gone to the wayside and people aren't getting the sleep they need and they're eating a bunch of junk food, and maybe they've been sassy and you haven't redirected them. And there comes a point where you're like, things are tightening up around here. We're going to bed earlier. I'm pulling the reins in a little tighter, and you get things back on track. So we have to do that in parenting, and we have to do that in our marriage. So just because it feels like things have gone off track, do not lose heart. Do not lose hope. This is normal in relationships. The best of marriages get off track from time to time. But the hallmark of happy couples is making repair attempts, of recognizing this isn't where we want to be and asking, how do we get back on track? So what does that look like to be off track? Well, maybe you're having some communication challenges. You just aren't talking effectively about things. You're not coming up with solutions. You're misunderstanding one another. And there's a lot of unresolved conflict. And maybe you even quit trying to express your needs and expectations. Or maybe you never did. Maybe you never really had a voice and you just internalized it all. And a lot of resentment is growing. Or maybe you have expressed your needs and it's in a way that's very demanding, which leads to defensiveness and resistance in the other person. Maybe your relationship feels off track because you aren't feeling that intimate or emotional connection. And the cascade of distance, loneliness, and isolation may have set in. So because there at one point may have been a lot of conflict, or it just feels like you don't get anywhere with a certain issue, you take on the thought, it's better to deal with this on my own, which begins that cascade of distance, loneliness, and isolation. And eventually you find yourself as two separate lives living under the same roof, not really connecting. And so while at first it feels like it fixed the issue, that there is now less fighting, there's less conflict, it didn't fix the issue at all because now you feel really lonely. And this is where divorce and affairs happen. And so this is not a good place to be. Dealing with it on your own is not the solution. But then you don't know how to deal with it. Well, if I turn toward, we're just going to fight and it's going to be all hard again. So you've got to learn to talk about things in a different way. Maybe there's some trust issues or unresolved emotional issues. Maybe your relationship has gotten off track because of external pressures and challenges, maybe stress at work or just other pressures outside of the relationship are impacting the marriage. Having children, parenting, that may be creating a divide, or you've lost each other as you've been dividing and conquering, trying to do all the things. Maybe you've had changes in your priorities, your roles, different responsibilities, or there's unmet expectations regarding different values, goals, or lifestyle. There can be a number of reasons that we feel off track in our relationship. So if your relationship is on track, what does that look like? When you say you want to get back on track, what is it that you are wanting? What does that look like to be on track? What is it that you are wanting to head toward? Maybe it's improved communication, to feel like you are connecting in a more effective and productive way, that you're being more open and honest. You feel like you're active listening to the other person, not just having monologues or debating and fighting with each other, that there is more validation of each other's feelings so that you can resolve your conflicts more constructively. Maybe this means there's greater emotional intimacy, that you're reestablishing that by expressing your love and appreciation and affection more frequently. Maybe getting back on track is just having some shared goals and prioritizing quality time together. That can help you create a shared vision for your future. And all of a sudden, you feel like your relationship's back on track again. When you have a focus on activities that you both enjoy instead of focusing on what you don't enjoy together, how you don't have anything in common anymore, look at what it is that you both want and put your energy into the shared want. When we make efforts to prioritize the relationship amidst life demands, we feel like our relationship is back on track. And I think a big one in terms of having your relationship in a place that feels good to you is when you are experiencing more positive sentiments and good feelings. You are feeling known and like you know the other person, and your attitude and energy has shifted more toward gratitude, optimism, and just a more positive outlook for the future. And then you're thinking the best of the other person instead of always thinking the worst. And you're making greater bids to connect, and you're acknowledging and seeing where your partner's trying to connect, and you are responding to that, and you're creating more shared meaning in your life. So there is where you are now, which may feel like you're off track, and where you want to be, which feels like, okay, we're back on the track. How do we get there? How do we get back toward the trajectory of where it is that we want to go? I think we have to have some foundational changes in how we are approaching our relationship. So we can't just jump to new actions and new activities together. We have to look at what it is that we have been believing about the other person, what we've been believing about ourselves, what we've been believing about our relationship, so that we can create that shift. It's going to change how we approach the relationship, but it does start in our mind. Also, being able to regulate your emotions, being more emotionally aware and knowing your tendencies to maybe react, maybe in a combative way or by withdrawing and isolating, so that you can respond to your emotions in a way that is more effective, and being able to support one another when you're feeling physiologically flooded, giving your partner space to calm down so that you guys can come back together again. That would be part of creating a healing separation. And I think then taking on some other new actions so that you can have a vision of a result you want, and those results, that result you want, you can turn it into different decisions, different actions that you're taking to get there. So today we're going to talk about creating a healing, a healthy separation. So what does that mean? So I'm not talking about moving out, separating your physical spaces. There may be a time and a need for that for some of you if you need a physical boundary in your relationship. But most of the time, research would show us that couples who separate usually end up divorced. Just separating physically isn't going to create a healing separation. Now, when we create a healing separation, what I'm talking about is cognitively, mentally, seeing a separation between who the other person is and who you are, so that you can actually become a stronger we, creating a separation so that you can connect in a healthier way. So in a relationship, there are two me's. There's a me and a you, and then there is a we, which is the entity of the two of you together. And what the two me's want is going to be different than what the we wants. So there should be a respect for each person's individual story, preferences,
personalities.
If there is not a respect for that, then you are just completely consumed with your story, your preferences, your desires, your perspective. You're not making room for a we. You're not making room for the other person. When you become a we, you are creating a culture that never existed before. We have created in our household the culture of Rich and Jill. And now we have children as part of that culture, Sawyer and Sophie, Rich, Jill, Sawyer, and Sophie. Although Sawyer is now out of the house, I haven't gotten that through my head quite yet, and he will be getting married in a few months. And so there is a culture that we establish, which is a conglomeration of the individuals. And we want to respect that greater whole. And so when you create a healthy separation, acknowledging the individual brains and wills that God has given each one of us, the individual ways he has created us, you are actually positioning yourself to value the greater whole better, that you are part of something greater than yourself, where Christ is the head. So oftentimes I like to use the analogy of staying out of the other person's lane. And what I mean by this is staying out of the other person's model. So if you've listened to my podcast, if you've been in any of my coaching groups, you know that we use the self-coaching model as part of the heart scan process. And the self-coaching model is comprised of five elements: circumstances, thoughts, feelings, actions, and results. Okay. So a circumstance, something happens, someone says words, someone does something. It's factual, but then you have a thought about it. You make it mean something that creates a feeling, a vibration in your body, which fuels certain actions, certain things you do and don't do, which is going to create a result in your life. And so if somebody has a thought about something and has a feeling and does something, their actions become a circumstance for you. So I had a couple yesterday and the wife was reading a book. So she had a model going on. Her model was her circumstance, thought, feeling, action, result. And one of the actions she was taking was reading this book. And the book was called Stay or Go. And that action that she was taking, that's her model, it became a circumstance for him. So it became a circumstance in his model that he had thoughts, feelings about, which he took certain actions from those feelings. And his thought was, this book could be a bad influence. He was afraid that maybe she was considering leaving him and that this book may influence her in a negative way. And he felt afraid. Now, he hadn't processed through all of that. He just reacted. It all happened so quickly. He saw the book, he assumed the worst. And so he had a reaction, which I think involved some yelling and expressing a lot of emotions. His actions, his yelling, his words then became a circumstance for her that she had thoughts and feelings about. So, can you see this interweaving of one another's lives? Somebody else's actions, somebody else's words, somebody else's thoughts and feelings, that belongs to them. But a lot of times we will hop into somebody else's model and play tug of war with it, or try to knock the pieces off the table. Like, well, you shouldn't think that. You shouldn't feel that. How dare that you said that? We start getting in their model rather than thinking, yeah, you can feel whatever you want. You can think what you want. Your feelings are legitimate. And if you want to yell and scream, you get to do that because you have free will. Adults get to do what they want to do. Now, it doesn't mean we don't have consequences for the choices that we make. But when we get in somebody else's model, when we get in another adult's model, we end up wasting a lot of our energy. And it would be so much better to recognize that they're having a model. So in this case, when the husband felt upset, rather than getting offended that he was upset and say, this is ridiculous that you are so upset about this, you shouldn't be upset, you could maybe acknowledge, okay, he's afraid I could leave. I understand why you would feel afraid. I understand why you would think that. But the same is true for him. If he could pause that initial fear, own it, recognize it, rather than just hopping into her model and disputing her action, then you could actually have a better conversation. Okay, so I'm hoping this makes sense. And so we would call this staying out of somebody's model, that they get to think, feel, and do what they want. But when we can see the differentiation between our model and their model and take ownership of our thoughts, what I'm thinking and feeling about their actions, then you are setting yourself up to connect in a healthier way, where you can have calm conversations about things and you can be less reactive. Now, one of the ladies in my VIP coaching group, we took this analogy a little bit further because she literally was talking about a situation where she is riding with her husband. She is the passenger, he is the driver, and she finds herself grabbing the dashboard and shrieking and just feeling a little on edge. Now, they've been married for a long time. I don't believe that there hasn't been any major car accidents or, you know, that for the most part, she has been safe driving with him, and she would still continue to ride with him in the car. But she was asking, I wonder what I can think about his driving that's going to make me feel a little bit more calm and not react so much. Now, when she shared this, it reminded me of when I was younger and my dad was driving and my mom would get a little reactive sometimes. She would grab the dashboard and squeal and kind of try to drive from the passenger side. And I remember my dad once saying, "Beverly, it's a wonder I'm alive all the years I've driven without you in the car." And that story always just gives me a little chuckle. I think it's kind of funny. It's true. But I find myself doing the same thing. Since I have been in my 50s, I find myself feeling a little bit more reactive when I am a passenger in the car with somebody else. So I don't know what that's about. Our reflexes, our perception. I don't know, but my husband is a wonderful driver. I would trust his driving more than I trust my driving, but I found myself kind of grabbing the dashboard and shrieking a little bit. And so for me, I'm like, I just need to close my eyes or not look or not pay attention, because if I'm going to choose to drive with him and be a passenger, then I want to trust him and let him do the driving. And it's really not serving me to just be on edge about all of this. Okay. So we could say, stay in your lane, stay in your model, or stay in your seat. If you're going to be a passenger, if you're going to choose to drive with someone, let them drive their car. Don't be trying to manipulate the steering wheel or offer commands from your side of the seat. Now, this doesn't mean we can't point out observations of things someone else might not see. But if we're always doing that, then we're not really yielding to the other person. We're not really submitting to them as the driver. We're not staying in our lane. We're not staying in our model, and that will not serve us. So when we talk about creating a healing separation, I hope this little analogy can help a little bit in seeing the value of that. So to create a healing separation, there are four things that you need to do. The first thing is stop trying to control, change, or manage the other person. There is an element of yielding to someone else. And when we are in a relationship, especially when we are married to someone, we have to be willing to yield that control over the whole wide world. When we put our energy into trying to control, change, and manage somebody else, the result is that we are exhausted. We are tired. We're constantly frustrated. So stop doing that. It's a waste of your time. Instead, you can reroute your energy to what you can control, which is you, your thoughts, your feelings, the actions you're taking. So rather than focusing on the man your husband should be, how he should be parenting, how he should be loving you as a husband, how he should be doing his job, why not focus on the woman that you want to be? What does she do when he does the things that he does? What does she say? What actions does she take? How does she handle a situation? Now, it doesn't mean that you just deal with everything on your own. Remember, I don't like that the cascade of distance, loneliness, and isolation, that is not the solution. But you have to create this healing separation so that you're not turning toward the other person and having conversations from this place of needing to control, change, or manage the other person. You want to turn toward them from a loving place, from a place of respect, from a place of honoring who they are and their free will. And when you reroute your energy and focus on yourself and what you can control, it's going to be much more effective. It's going to be a better use of your time. You're going to feel very empowered. The third thing is turn your attention into trust. So God is the Lord of circumstance and He gives us free will, but He can also work on our behalf. And when we yield ourselves to Him and submit to Him and trust Him, we can partner with Him in creating change in our life. And so we have a tool that He gives us, prayer, which is communication with Him. We can pray for other people who we have no control over. We can pray for sickness. We can pray for situations. When you turn your attention into trust, you can let your worries, you can let your desires lead you into a deeper relationship with Jesus. When there are unmet expectations and wants, you can trust that God is binding your heart to His, which is such a good thing. When you cooperate with that process and receive the gift of a deeper relationship with Him, it is a beautiful thing, so that our desires and worries and wants, rather than becoming catalysts for our unhappiness, they can actually become a bridge that leads us to the source, the supplier of all of our needs. And so when you turn your attention into trust, instead of trying harder, you're trusting God. Sometimes we confuse trust and obedience with, I need to try harder. We know that brokenness and poverty is a gateway to receive. We can read about that in the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the meek, for they shall possess the land. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after justice, for they shall have their fill. When we joyfully yield to God's character, to His image, then we are becoming more like God. So it is in God's nature to yield, to surrender, to submit. Jesus came and His entire life was yielded to the Father. And at the end, when He was facing His death, He knew what was before Him. He did ask, Father, if it's Your will, remove this from me. But if not, Your will be done. He laid down His will. So Christ is not asking us to do something that He has not already modeled for us, something that is not in His very nature. So I think our central purpose in life, our central purpose in marriage, in our relationships, is to be delivered from our sense of self-centeredness. And self-centeredness is simply when we make ourself God, our selfish ambitions, our desires, our conceits, that is our God. We are self-serving. Now, some of us can be people-pleasing and we've put other people in the position of God. But when you are self-serving, when you have made self God, you are going to end up disgusted with yourself. And when you make other people God, you are going to end up disappointed and frustrated. And so the only person that we want to make God is God. We want to surrender to Him. And when we go through the avenue, when Jesus is the center of it all, in our relationships with others, we do that through our relationship with Him, then we can love others, we can serve them as a way to honor the Lord, and we can do that with the energy that He has placed within us. So when we joyfully yield to God, we can lay aside our vain conceits, our selfish ambitions, which include things like our need to be right, to have the final word, to correct other people. Another way you can turn that tension into trust is through prayer. God has given us this tool that we can present our request to Him with praise and thanksgiving. So while you can't control your husband, you can pray for him. You can pray that his heart would be sensitive and open to that of his Father, that he would experience the love and fullness and the security of knowing God, that he would lead well So the things you worry about with your husband, turn those into prayers. And so that you can leave those concerns at the feet of God and that you can trust him with what he wants to do. And you can pray that your husband would have a willing heart, a teachable spirit. I think also praying for yourself, praying that God would search your heart. Now, imagine this. Imagine if your husband would pray for himself, that he would start his day with, "Lord, search my heart. Show me if there's any offensive way in me. Open my eyes and help me to see things that I may be missing. Give me a teachable spirit." Wouldn't that be amazing if your husband was praying that way, positioning himself in this humble way before the Lord each day? Well, why not you do that? You do that for yourself. You position yourself. When we seek God first, when he is the center of our heart and our desires, he will provide all of our needs according to his riches and glory. The last part, the fourth thing that you can do if you want to create a healing separation is to just love the other person and be loved by God. Everything you need, you have in your Father, your worth, your value, your purpose and identity. There's nothing you can do to earn that. And you may have put up some walls, some barriers in your relationship with God. Maybe you've been upset with him, so you put up a wall. Maybe you feel ashamed about yourself, so you put up a wall. Maybe you think you have to perform and show up in a more perfect way than you are, so you put up a wall. And maybe you just want to be your own God and do things the way you want to do it, so you put up a wall. But when you remove that wall, when you yield to him, then you can experience his love and his abundance that he has given you already. And that's going to change how you love others. When you love others from that place of having all that you need already, then you are not needy in the relationship. You are not demanding. You are not looking for the other person to show up in a certain way so that you can be happy. Your husband becomes someone who is just there for you to love. And you can ask God to show you what does it look like to love him. And it feels so good to love. The alternative is to hate, or maybe the alternative is actually to just feel neutral, to completely disconnect. And all of that feels terrible. But when you are free, when you have the freedom to love, no matter how the other person may respond to you, that feels so good. So all that you do, you can do it unto the Lord with the love and energy he places inside of you. So I know in my own marriage, I have come to different points where I had to really yield to the Lord and release and let go and trust God to maybe bring certain things to him in prayer so that I could turn toward my husband in a way that was loving, even if I needed to discuss, have hard conversations or discuss difficult things or certain things without a word. I just needed to be the woman that God wanted me to be and pray that God would work on his heart because maybe he was at a place where he wasn't ready to hear what I was saying. I had to lay down certain elements, seeds that could be planted of a bitterness that could grow. And that was part of creating a healing separation of knowing that my husband was not designed to meet my deepest longings and every need. He could not fill the place within me that God was designed to fill. And taking on the thought that he can think, feel, and do whatever he wants, that God has given him that will, was very helpful for me so that I could decide what I would think, feel, and do. And when you create that healing separation, this is an ongoing thing, but it's not a parking spot. That okay, I am separate, I am here, and you are here. No, it is designed to create a greater we. It is designed to create a position where you can yield to another person, but you have to create that healing separation so that you can learn to turn toward in a way that is healthier. So next month, I am opening up a program, Relationship Reinvention, which is different than my other coaching programs. My other coaching programs, Clarity and Courage and the Happiest Lives Academy, those are designed for Christian women. but relationship reinvention is designed for couples. And I did this group last year and I felt like it went really good. And because of popular demand, others who have requested and asked if I'm doing relationship reinvention again, I am bringing it back this year. And if you are interested in doing this with your husband, I would love to have you join us. You can go to myhappyvault.com to get all the details, but it is a 12-week group, which gives you live coaching calls, and it gives you interventions, support, workbooks, lessons that you can do together as a couple so that you can reinvent your relationship and get your relationship in a place that you feel good about. In the relationship reinvention, I give you all the tools that I think you need to have a better relationship. So in summary, I just want to recap the four things that you can do to create a healing separation is to, number one, stop trying to control, change, or manage the other person. Number two, reroute your energy to what you can control, which is yourself. Number three, turn your attention into trust. Let your worries and desires lead you into a relationship with Jesus. And number four, just love and be loved. Thank you guys for coming today to listen to the podcast. And we will continue this series next week as we talk about regulating your emotions. I'll see you then.
If you enjoyed this podcast, I would love to help you take this concept and apply it. Join me in Clarity and Courage, my cost-effective coaching program for Christian women. Each month, receive the tools you need to apply the concepts and grow. We will meet on a live coaching call where you can ask me anything. Plus, you get access to the worksheet workshop where you can have conversations with other women just like you. Learn more and sign up at myhappyvault.com/clarityandcourage.